Ang is invited to go back to our breathing so that our collective energy of mindfulness bring us together as an organism, going as a river with no more separation. Let the whole Sangha breathe as one body, generate peace as one body, be free as one body. Let us transcend the boundaries of a delusive self, liberating from the superiority complex, the inferiority complex, and the equality complex.
So before we begin our Dharma talk and discussion, why don't we do a little loving kindness meditation, metta, which we do, I guess, here from time to time, but is a very central practice in the Buddhist meditative tradition. Through the practice of mindfulness, we develop stability, we develop clarity, and the capacity to live wholeheartedly in the present. But it's through the practice of loving kindness that we learn the most harmonious and skillful way to be in relationship. And we are in relationship. We're in relationship to ourselves. We're in relationship to everyone we come in contact with. We're in relationship to the earth. And going back to the time of the Buddha, it is taught the best attitude of the heart toward all these various types of relationships is one of kindness, one of caring, one of friendship. Seems to feel the best, we could say. There are many ways of doing it, so just close your eyes a second and just bring your awareness to your heart center. Heart center is that place that we usually acknowledge as the kind of seat of the heartfelt good wishes of the body-mind. And bring to mind someone you care about, someone you love, or several such people, or pets, doesn't matter. But someone, when you just bring them to mind, see them in your mind's eye, you smile. It brings warmth to your heart, we would say. And let us first think, perhaps these days, tonight, perhaps oneself, perhaps others, there are people who are fearful, people who are worried, people who have anxiety, both ourselves or those we know, or many peoples in the world have fear, worry, anxiety, for all kinds of reasons. So why don't we bring these people to mind, or this part of ourself, if we have that part within us, and bring that part to mind. And to that part, or to those people, or to those persons, we say, may you be free of fear. May you be free of worry, anxiety, free of terror. May you feel safe, secure, stable. May your mind be at peace. And may you be able to enjoy your life as it is. And there may be parts of ourselves, or people we know, or people in the world who are angry, resentful. And to these parts of ourselves, or people we know who may be suffering from this type of mental, emotional affliction, people in the world, groups in the world that are motivated by anger and hatred. We bring them to mind. We bring those parts of ourselves to mind, and we say, may you be free of anger, hatred, resentment. May your mind be full of love and caring rather than hatred and anger. May you feel safe and secure. May your minds be at peace. May you live in harmony. Like this, we send good wishes to ourselves and to others. Perhaps there are parts of ourselves, or people we know and love, or people in the world who are suffering from sadness, from grief, from loss, from despair, from depression, sadness, hurt. And whether it's ourself or others, again, we open our heart, we send the loving energy that we have within us. May you be free of sadness, of hurt, of pain, disappointment. May you be happy. May you be at peace. May you be whole and feel whole. May you be aware of the goodness in your life. And may you see the good things in life and in yourself. And perhaps there are specific types of difficulties or challenges that you may be facing in your life. There may be a certain type of support or kindness or counsel, wise advice, caring, friendship that you need to deal with whatever you're dealing with in your life. So take a moment to send that kind of supportive energy to yourself with the good wishes for your own well-being. That the difficulties of your life may be eased. And you may be at peace. And there may be some specific people in your life, family, friends, colleagues, who also may be going through some very specific kind of difficulties, challenges. And you can bring them to mind and hold them in your heart mind and send them, again, the energy of loving kindness and send them good wishes. That their obstacles be removed, that their suffering be eased, that they know health, physical, mental, emotional well-being in their life. So in this practice, we open our heart and we offer a friendship and the qualities of friendship, the qualities of a good heart. To those in need, those we know and those we don't know, and those close and far away. And just let your awareness come into your heart and see if your heart is perhaps a little more warmer, softer, more open than it was a few minutes ago. And if it is that way, be aware of that and feel what that's like. To have a mind and a heart that is concerned about the well-being of not only oneself, but of others as well. And so feel what that's like to have that kind of heart. And spend a moment just imagining what it might be like to take that heart home with you tonight. Bring it into your daily life tomorrow, the next day, how you may be a little different. And how you relate to yourself, how you extend friendship to yourself, and how you offer that more broadly to those around you. Good. Is there anybody here for the first time tonight? Anybody? Oh. Any questions? Everything is... it's a little strange what we do here. No? 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 Oh, good. But yeah, does any of you have any questions about what we do or what we don't do or why we do what we do or... Not yet. Oh, good. And then usually the next thing we ask from anybody is, does anybody have any questions in terms of their practice and how they apply the teachings and the practices to the situations of their daily life? We all sometimes struggle a little bit. And so if anybody is not clear how to apply the teachings of the Dharma, the Buddha's Dharma, the teachings and practices of mindfulness, to various situations when we'll be dealing with in life, please feel free to ask any questions if anything's not clear. And I take that means that everyone is leading a brilliantly enlightened life. living in deep happiness and well-being and harmony with all beings and all situations. That's wonderful. Maybe we can just skip the Dharma talk and go right to tea and cookies. What do you? Or if I miss something. So this is the Zen teachings of Rinzai. Rinzai is the Japanese of Linchi. Linchi is one of the great Chinese Chan, later called Zen in Japan, Chan in Chinese. Great Zen teachers. And those of you familiar with Thich Nhat Hanh, he is in the lineage of Linchi. I think we just were looking at that, 24th, 26th, 34th, that document we were looking at. Remember it said he's the 20, you forgot. I forget too, I think it was 24th or something. Something generation. So one of the things in kind of Zen lineages, or other types of lineages that are based on transmission from teacher to disciple, one knows one's lineage because the transmission has gone authentically from teacher to student, and so you would know if you received transmission, you would from your teacher, you would know who your teacher was, who received transmission from their teacher, and usually these are documents. And you can trace them back. At a certain point going back, it loses a little bit of history. And perhaps it's a little made up. Usually the lineages that are very clear in most of the countries are very clear because they were written down and noted and people knew them. It just gets a little, the transmission from India to these countries, and then what went on in India for many generations is often less historically based. So Linchi, great teacher. He died January 10th, 866 AD. So, 1 might wonder what somebody from the 9th century could possibly have to say to us in our modern life, so completely different outwardly from the life of 9th century China. And yet because the Buddhist teaching speaks directly to the human condition, we find that even though historically, sociologically, et cetera, things have changed. Yet the human condition, I think, remains fairly standardized, both in terms of just the basic conscious or unconscious aspiration of human beings to be happy. And the continued difficulty that human beings seem to have in their capacity to be happy, to both as individuals or as groupings of individuals, families, communities, countries, nations, the world. So I think the relevance of these ancient teachings has not changed. Because human beings are still struggling with the same fundamental questions that they've always struggled with, and that the great teachers, and we know mostly all the religions, their great teachers go back thousands of years, right? So it's quite interesting, isn't it, that in our evolution, in our advancement of civilization. Over the thousands of years, we are still struggling to live up to the basic teachings and the examples set for us by the founders of the great religions thousands of years ago. It says something. It's up to each of us to decide what that something is. But it's there's something very obvious, and perhaps a little poignant, tragic, in that statement. So this is a collection of teachings and talks from the Zen Chan master, Lin Chi. And so in this teaching, he says, followers of the way. For those of you who knew the way, this is a capital W, way. Okay. Now, the way, the path, refers to, we could say, well, it means many things. I mean, we could say it means the way of the Buddha, the way of the path to awakening, the way of the path to enlightenment. Or we could say, at a deeper sense, the way is just the way of how to live in truth. So he's addressing himself to an audience where he considers everyone here is a follower of the way. And he called his teachings the Dharma of the heart. Very interesting. The Dharma, the way, the teachings of the heart. But here he's not just talking about, obviously, the physical heart, but he's talking heart meaning the very essence of what it means to be alive. Followers of the Dharma of the heart. This Dharma has no form and pervades the 10 directions. Now that's a hell of a statement, right? Because, you know, most religious teachings, when we enter them, they give us lots of forms, right? They give us, things to look at, various kinds of statues and images, and, you know, this is where the deity is, and this is, you know, and they give us, religious places to come together. They give us texts, they give us books, they give us catechism, they give us whole belief systems, right? Most religions give us lots of lots of things that we can grasp onto, don't they?
Yeah.
And so he says, the Dharma of the heart has no form and pervades the 10 directions. 10 directions is everywhere, north, south, east, west, above, you know, below, the zenith and nadir. So he says, the true Dharma of the heart is not found in things. But yet it pervades, it is everywhere. It is there is nowhere where it cannot be found. There is nowhere where it not is, where it isn't. Okay? He says, in the eye, it is called seeing. So he's beginning to give us a little, he's getting a little more, he's pointing it out more clearly, right? In the eye, now this is the Dharma of the heart. In the eye, it is called seeing. In the ear, hearing. In the nose, smelling. In the mouth, talking. In the hands, grasping. In the feet, walking. Well, this is interesting, isn't it? Because most of us think the true Dharma, the true path, right? The Godhead, right? The Christ, the Christ, whatever we want to call it, is somewhere to be gotten to, right? We are the fallen, right? We are the sinful, we are the deluded, right? And the truth is somewhere else, right? That we need to get to, right? If we can just get everything out of the way. And he says, no, it's everywhere. And just because some of us will think, well, everywhere, 10 directions, it's like out there somewhere, right? Right away we go, oh, it's in the 10 directions. It pervades everywhere, you know? So right away we distance ourselves from it and make it a thing outside ourselves. So no, he says, it's in the eye, it is called seeing, right? We all have eyes, don't we? So he says, in that seeing is the Dharma. in that hearing is the Dharma, in that tasting, in that smelling, right? In that feeling, in that thinking, in that touching, in that walking. Fundamentally, it is one light. Differentiated, it becomes the six senses, right? So it's like you have a light, right? And if you run it, if you remember your little science experiments, you know, if you run it through a prism, what happens? All of a sudden, that one white light becomes what? Seven, Roy G. Biv. What is it? How many, George? Seven colors, right? One light runs through a prism, becomes seven colors. We take this one Dharma, this one awareness, and all of a sudden, you know, when it's in the eye, it's called seeing. When it's in the ear, it's called hearing. When it's in the nose, it's called smelling. Right? But what is that essence of all these consciousnesses, these awarenesses? Right? This is, he's saying, this is where we find this one Dharma. Fundamentally, it is one light. Differentiated becomes the six senses. This is very important because usually we go, what? There's the Dharma, the true way, and then there's the ordinary, you know, there's the absolute, there's the relative, there's the conditioned, and then there's the unconditioned, right? We you know, there's the spiritual, and then there's the material. We divide up. They're enlightened Buddhas, and then they're ignorant human beings. Right? That's we create a world that's called duality. Everything is separate. And he's saying, no. You look at it from one direction, it's what? One light. Right? You separate it, you differentiate it, it's six different senses. Right? It's one light, seven colors. But they are the same. When one's whole heart comes to a full stop, one is delivered where one stands. Now he's telling us about practice. When one's whole heart, now here again, heart really means heart-mind. You have to remember that in traditional Buddhist thinking, heart and mind are not separate, right? In the West, we go, oh, my heart, it's the seat of my emotion, my mind is it. But in Buddhism, heart-mind is the same. It's all one mind, just different aspects, right? So he says, when one's whole heart comes to a stop, one is delivered. What does it mean one's whole heart comes to a full stop? Well, most of the time we are what? Our heart mind is going out, right? Going out to objects. Attaching, averting, liking, disliking, wanting, not wanting. Right? Desiring, grasping, hating, liking. So all the time we are consumed, we are obsessed with going out from our senses, seeing objects and grasping at them. Right? We leave this intrinsic light, this intrinsic awareness, this intrinsic knowing. And we just endlessly are playing around with things of the external world, or things of the internal world, such as thoughts. We're endlessly just consumed. So we are quite active, aren't we? Very busy people. We are very busy running around doing this and doing that, especially this time of year. Everybody's so busy running around, right? And even when we stop to meditate or rest or go to sleep, our minds are continually busy. We are very active. When one's whole heart comes to a full stop, Earlier in our meditation, we talked about what? Letting go. Can we just let go? That's like coming to a stop. Things continue, but we stop. The mind may continue creating thoughts, but we no longer chase them. We get off the wheel, the merry-go-round still goes round. You remember you're on the merry-go-round or the teeter-totter and you jump off? Right? It still goes round. But you're not on it anymore, so you're no longer dizzy. We have to get off. We have to stop. Thich Nhat Hanh always says that, stop. We grew up hearing, you know, don't just stand there, do something. And Thich Nhat Hanh says, don't keep doing something, stop and do nothing. Do nothing. Stop. Right? So in that stopping, in that resting, in that letting go, one, he says, is delivered, right? Delivered from what? From our anxieties, from our fears, from our stresses, from our angers, from our resentments, from our obsessive involvement in the ups and downs and the dramas of our life, from suffering. Right? And that is what the Buddha said. I teach one thing. I teach the deliverance from suffering. That's all my teaching's about. I'm not here to be known as a great philosopher. I'm not here to be known as a great metaphysician. I'm not here to be a great debater. I'm not here, right? I'm not here to have the answers to everything. I'm not here to be the smartest guy in the room. I'm here to help deliver people from their suffering. Or we could say I'm here to deliver people to their state of happiness. To their original state of wholeness, completeness, well-being. When one's whole heart comes to a full stop, one is delivered where one stands. Again, this is all, it's very simple. But this is the really essence of Zen. You know, one doesn't have to go there to be delivered. Right? Deliverance doesn't only happen in the future or after we die. Right? Deliverance happens right here where we sit, where we stand. If we what? Stop. Another way to put it is, we got to stop the nonsense, right? Now, each of us understands that in a different way, right? But if we sometimes step back and take an objective look at our life, we may say, wow, what a lot of nonsense, right? The things I get riled up about, and things I get all bothered about, or things I just get all involved in. What a bunch of nonsense, right?
It's interesting, the word nonsense.
Nonsense. It doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? If one wants to be delivered, right? If one doesn't want to be delivered, right? If one wants to continue along their neurotic, conflict-driven, ridden, kind of pain-producing life, it makes a lot of sense to continue, right? But if we say no, I want to be delivered from ignorance, from suffering, from stupidity, from making the same mistakes all over again, from emotional ability and always going up and down and up and down and back and forth and right? If I want to be free of that, then it doesn't make a lot of sense, a lot of what I do. Now then, Master Linchi says, why do I speak this way? See, he's been speaking very simply, but very directly, hasn't he? I mean, we've only read four sentences, right? So he's speaking very much from his heart to his students. He says, why do I speak this way to you? And he says then, it is only because I see you, followers of the way, all running about with an agitated heart, quite unable to stop, fretting yourselves over the playthings of the old masters. The playthings of the old masters, you know, that could have many meanings, but it means we are, you know, we're debating, we're thinking about, we're analyzing all the teachings and the lives and the practices of the old masters, as if that's what it's about, right? And he says, no, it's only about stopping right where you are, right where you're standing, and be aware that this Buddha light is shining in where? In your seeing, in your smelling, in your tasting, in your touching, in your feeling. That's why we practice mindfulness, right? The practice of mindfulness reveals the wonder of just tasting, just seeing, just smelling, just hearing. Now that just means there's nothing else needed, right? It's very hard for us. We are so used to embroidering, commenting on, labeling our experience. Right? And he's saying the essence is right here, in the direct experience of the moment in your very life. Right? Not, you know, it's not some spiritual life that we need to be living. That's just another costume that we put on. Right? We take off our worldly costume and we put on our spiritual costume. Still a costume. He's saying, just be totally present to your experience wherever you are. Right? Wherever your life is, whatever you're doing, be totally in it. Right? Live a life of awareness, live a life of mindfulness, live a life of presence. We are not spiritual people when we read spiritual books, when we have spiritual discussions. We think we are, but all we're having is what? Discussions. All we're doing is reading a book. Now again, you know, I'm not saying that that stuff isn't interesting, fun, but that's, we can't confuse it and think we're really practicing the way when we're doing that stuff, right? We practice the way when we stop, right? And are totally present to our experience. So you see, this is a wonderful teaching, because for anybody, it means wherever you are, whatever you do in life, whatever your situation in life, you have the capacity right then and there to stop and be totally present and alive to what's going on in the moment. Are there any questions about this? I mean, it can't be that easy, can it? I mean, does anybody like think of their job or think of their life and go, there's no way that I can lead an awakened life in the context of my life? Does anybody think there are such impediments in their life that they cannot stop the nonsense? Don't be ashamed to I think it's a choice all the time.
Yeah. It's just you have a moment to stop. And by choosing this moment, or things are just so hectic that you just say, oh, I have to go with it here.
What?
That things just get so hectic that, oh, well, I'll deal with it later. So you just,
well, what am I going to deal with later? But what does that mean? You see, even when we talk this way, and we do talk this way, so when you say things are getting so hectic, things are so crazy, what's really going on?
Mind.
Oh, you're talking about in your mind.
Right.
So there's just your mind's very busy.
Right.
It's going this way and that way. It's presenting one drama after another.
Right.
Okay.
So,
and there you are.
At times you just choose not to deal with it.
Well, first of all, what the practice gives us is first the capacity to know to know that this out of control, hectic, crazed mind is just that. Okay? So just to have that kind of awareness, most people just go along with it and are led, just led around by the craziness of the mind, so they become crazy. Right? Again, there's a difference. You know.
But you say that a lot of times stress is because we've constructed a reality that we can't quite live up to. So we've set goals and we've set an impossible list of things to accomplish, and when we can't meet those, that's when we start to feel.
Yeah, I mean, it's all self-created. I mean, when we step back, we go, in reality, these goals, these objectives, we've created, right? I mean, some people think, if I think it, or especially if I write it down, sometimes if it gets on paper, then it's really real. It's like, when there's ink to the paper or something, then it takes on a reality that's even, and heaven forbid you should kind of make it into a Word document and print it out. Then it's really real.
Hang it on the fridge,
and now we have something to really make ourselves miserable, and we forget that we created it, and then the reality. What's going to happen if you don't do it? Right, you see, we start. If we think happiness comes from accomplishing goals, right, then we have to say that I'm in a place now of unhappiness. I'm in a place of deficiency. I am less than. But when I accomplish these goals, whatever they are, short range, medium range, long range, then I will be what? Accomplished. Fulfilled. Worthy. And then I can be what? Happy.
And make new goals.
Well, but whatever. Dharma comes from the opposite place. What does he say? Where is this mysterious way? Right here. It's already right here. Again, when you know it's already right here, you can accomplish goals or not accomplish goals. Your happiness and meaning in life is not based on that. Right? If you think, things only will get good when I get, to the end, you've already set yourself up for, right? Because if it's all good at the end, then this has to be what? Bad. Right? I can't wait till the weekend. I mean, everybody talks that way. Right? I can't wait till the weekend. People meet each other on Wednesday, two more days, Right? But then I say, what are we saying about then about our Wednesday? It's something not good. It's something we have to endure, right? Life begins Friday night.
And Sunday is spoiled because Monday falls.
Right, I mean, because it's, again, but the truth is what? You know, if you're in outer space and you look down on the planet Earth, right? Let's say you were way out in space, you looked down on planet Earth. Could you tell just from looking at it whether it was Wednesday or Monday? Could you? No, it would look all the same, wouldn't it? It's all made up. And we made it up. Now again, because we live in society, because we live together, because we have jobs, you know, we have to, you know, people develop things like calendars and dividing the day up into 24 hours, you know. So when I say, Doug, you know, I'll meet you Tuesday at 12 a.m., we can go to show up on the same time, you know. It's convenient, right, to make these categories. But they're not real. I mean, what does 2010 mean? It's just made up. So arbitrarily, we decided, oh, it started then. Right? You know, it's endless, right? Can anybody find the beginning of time? No. But yet we go, you know, oh, this is 2010. How many more days to 2011? Now again, you know, for certain reasons, actuarial reasons and whatever, it's good to, you know, have dates and remember people's birthdays and stuff like that. But, you know, you find out when you can retire and stuff. So it's good for certain things, but it's made up. Right? So we can use the things of life, but they don't have to rule us, control us, and make us unhappy. If we can't be happy Wednesday, we will not be happy on Saturday. You know, we'll do things that make us think we're happy, but we really won't be happy. Because we don't know how to be happy just with things as they are, right? We want to be able to be happy Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Happy at work, happy not at work. Happy at home, happy away from home. I mean, happy, I don't mean giggle, giggle. You know, laugh, laugh, joke, joke. But just a deep sense of well-being and ease. Like that. With some other people, just. Yes?
I find it very difficult to find the balance, not with personal goals or personal dissatisfaction, but things that are happening, that happen in life, and happen in our culture, happen in the world, happen in life. And then how do I, if I bring into the news, all that stuff that's going on, you know, so I get to a point where I think, well, the only way to deal with it, either be very activist or totally drives you crazy and just totally, absolutely put myself in a cocoon and not deal with that nap like it doesn't happen.
Right. And so
I don't, you know, so, or do you act, okay, I'm going, I don't understand.
Yeah, well, that's called the middle way. So the question is, you're aware, let's say, what's going on in the world and all the issues and the problems and the injustices and the environmental issues and the economic issues and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? And you go, when I read this stuff, it either makes me think I just should go out there and do everything I can to, right, make this a better world and be a full-time activist or whatever, or else I just have to, you know, just turn my back and ignore the whole thing, right? The two extremes. Right? And the issue for all of us is, I mean, this is the world, right? And you know, the 21st century, we have not invented suffering. I mean, the Buddhist teaching is 2,500 years old, so we know, you know, that the capacity of human beings to be individually and socially create suffering and pain for each other it seems to be very much part of the human condition. But as you say, you know, one of the disadvantages of our modern age is because of newspapers and communication and internet and everything, you know, we can be aware of everything. Right? That's all. Nothing's changed. Right? Except, you know, these days because of the glut of information, we can, you know, Twitter it, whatever, you know, we can instantaneously know what's going on everywhere. But that's what's all what's changed. Right? The world is still what it is. Right? I mean, on the one hand, you are alive, right? And you get up, and you see, and you hear, and you smell, and you taste, and you have your life and the people you're involved in, and you have your life, right? And that unfolds moment to moment, minute by minute, hour by hour, every day. Right? And even in that immediacy of your own life, you have many different types of encounters. And yet we are not islands, right? I mean, we are affected by the sufferings of those that go around us. I mean, that is why we practice, actually. Right? Why we practice mindfulness, why we practice concentration, why we practice insight, why we practice loving kindness. So we develop the capacity to be in the world, which is the world of pain and suffering and happiness. And to be able to deal with the world as it is, skillfully, open-heartedly, but not to be overwhelmed by it. Right? Because the it that we're overwhelmed with, when we're reading the paper or we're looking at the news, we are just seeing what? Images, information. But still, our reality is what unfolds in front of us. And even that reality, when you pick up the newspaper, you watch the news, and you see suffering, how do you respond to it? You know, the one thing we can always do in that moment is send loving kindness, like we did earlier today, to those people who are suffering. Right? We can always do that, at a minimum. Right? I mean, people who are suffering do not need people to be freaked out about their suffering. Right? The world needs what? People who care. Right? People who are compassionate. People who are nonviolent. People who have patience. People of understanding. People who know how to take care of other human beings, to be fearless, to give protection to others, and to extend oneself in any way one can to create a better world. And that's something that each of us, you know, have to find a way of doing. But, you know, If we get overwhelmed, you know, like you can get overwhelmed with requests from nonprofits. Right? I mean, it's endless, you know. I mean, what were they saying in Haiti? There were, I don't know, I'm making this up, you know, 1,000 nonprofits, you know what I mean, people doing, I mean, it's overwhelming. They're all doing good. But I mean, right? I mean, should you help every, and that's only one country. You see, we go crazy because we turn this into quantitative. I mean, each of us has to find our way. Right? Some people, their way may be a very personal. Some way people may find their way very individual. Some people may find their way very, you know. Some people may just be very, I'm just going to work on transforming myself, freeing myself of all my anger, my hatred, my fear, and I just want to open my heart. That's what I want to devote these years to. So at some future time, I can be of great capacity to help human beings. Other people might say, you know, I want to be the most loving, caring, selfless mother, father, a lover, friend, husband, wife, colleague, son, daughter that I can be. Right? Somebody else may say, I want to be all that, but I also want to help in my community, right? To help people in need. Right? Somebody else may say, I want to do all that, but I also want to do everything I can to stop war. How about, you know, stop war, stop people killing each other. Right? Some people might want to work on environmental, you know what I mean? It's, you know, so somebody, there may be people here who really want to be Mother Teresa. I want to be a great light. I want to go out there and do wonderful things for beings. I'm willing to give up my own personal life and just be of service to others, you know, and wonderful people do that too. But don't make yourself crazy trying to be everything. Right? I mean, the teachings of Buddhism give us the capacity to see clearly and to have open, right, minds, to be able to appreciate what it means to be a human being and to bring forth, you know, the real wonderful qualities of our hearts and minds, right? And then how we take that into the world and where we take it in the world, you know, is up to each of us. Right? But one has to be strong in oneself. You know what I'm saying? One has to know oneself. Right? You have to know yourself. And know who you are and know how you want to manifest yourself in this life. Right? And then you just walk your path. You know, the Buddha 2,500 years ago said life is suffering. I mean, he had never, you know, he never watched CNN. You know, I mean, he didn't read the newspapers. He didn't get on the Google update every day, you know, of news. But somehow he figured it out, just from going around his town, observing human beings. Right? He saw, you know, A lot of suffering, a lot of misery. So, you know, nothing's changed. I mean, it's changed, you know, historically it's changed, it manifests different way, but at essence, still dealing with the same stuff. Is that helpful? Any other questions? We should be stopping. Any there? Good. So thank Master Lin Chi for his heartfelt teaching. Thank you all for coming.